Good afternoon and welcome to the Omega Leadership Series show. We are live in studio with best-selling author Lori Beth Jones. Welcome, Lori Beth.
Thank you, Shelley. It's great to be here as always.
Good to hear you and excited about this new launch into our fourth book of this Omega Leadership Series process called Teach Your Team to Fish. Wow, what a great book.
Well, thank you. It was a lot of fun to write.
Yeah, it looks like it. Just getting into these first few chapters talking about how Jesus gathered, formed, developed, led 12 people, right? Is that what we're going to be talking about?
Right.
Very interesting. On the flap of this book. I want to just read a couple pieces here. In this first, on the inside flap of the book, it says, Lori Beth Jones has given hundreds of thousands of business readers insight into how the ideas of Jesus can be used to enhance performance. One of the most critical work areas for anyone, whether a manager or a CEO, a teacher or a pastor, is cooperative teamwork. Wow, what a great word, right?
Teamwork, cooperative teamwork.
Yeah. I love some of your tweets this week about pretty much everything rises and falls on teamwork, right?
Right.
And gathering people and have them stay together rather than pull apart. Yeah, how do we do that?
Right.
So talk to us a little bit about this book, Lori, and how it fits in with the direction that you're trying to take your audience here, this Teach Your Team to Fish. What is it about?
Well, the Jesus CEO grew out of the fascination I had for how did he manage and lead a group of people, his staff, essentially. And that book was, I guess, 256 pages. And I felt like I had just barely scraped the surface. Mm. And so when the publisher came back and said, let's go deeper with Teach Your Team to Fish, I was all over it because, I've told people that studying Christ is like having the hope diamond in your hand. And every time you shift it just slightly, it casts off a different reflection of the glory of God. And so every time we look at Christ and what he's done with his team, it's a different facet of the diamond.
Wow. That's beautifully said. I love that. I've noticed, again, in this book, you've divided it into four sections. Our last book, Jesus Entrepreneur, was also in four sections. So I love how you make this so simplistic for our minds to stay simple, right? But these profound truths are very, very deep and powerful as we unpack them each week here on the show. But this particular construct of Teach Your Team to Fish, you've divided into he excited them, he grounded them, he transformed them, and then he released them. Talk to us a little bit about how you pulled the four elements. You hadn't written the four elements yet when you wrote this particular book. So how did that come about for you?
Well, when I looked at the broad categories of what Jesus did with his team, and thinking about the elements, all the power of God that's expressed in Genesis 1, the creation story, I thought, well, this is what he did. He excited them, and he grounded them, and he transformed them, and he released them. And it was like, well, that's, he excited them like fire. He grounded them like earth. He transformed them like water, and he released them like the wind. He did those things in 3 years.
Mm.
And every leader has the same calling, I believe, to do those things. And sometimes we'll get leaders that are really good in one of them, but they're not developed in the other three or the other two areas. So the goal of the book was to not only acknowledge people who have the natural giftedness, perhaps, of excitement or grounding or transformation or releasing others, but to get the overall picture so that you're not actively releasing releasing untransformed people products or services into the marketplace.
Right, right. Beautifully said. Can you just say that one more time?
Well, here's the example, and I think in this book I really drill down, like you used the term drill down. If you are really good at exciting your team, the charismatic leaders, they can get people excited about change. But if you do not ground them in the earth basic structures, the logistics, the tasks that need to be done in order to get there, then you're going to fail them as a leader. That's where it's going to fall apart for you. Excitement only carries people so far. It does not pay the bills in the desert. It does not, you know, when they get discouraged and they get, what happens when they get unexcited? And like Muhammad Ali said, everybody has a plan for the ring until they get hit. And when you're a leader, you're mobilizing this great energy to move out of inertia. And so if you are gifted as a charismatic leader, you have the ability to launch things. But then what happens when they're not grounded or they're not transformed? And then let's say you're a wind fire leader like myself. So I have the ability to excite people about things. And I, through my books, I hope that I release them into things. But if we don't have that training component, which you have brought to the team, where we're training people and over time grounding and transforming their ways of thinking and being in the world, then we would just be actively releasing untransformed people, products, and services into the world.
Mm. Wow. Well, I can see this is going to be a great series of conversations. And really, Teach Your Team to Fish is, if I had to pick one, I don't think I could, but it is at the top. I think it's in the top five of my favorite books that you've written. It is just a powerful synopsis, I believe, and really a training manual of sorts, Lori, on kind of how to, how Jesus did it, and then how you as a leader can teach your team to fish. And so thank you for launching us into this fourth book of the series and looking forward to unpacking it as we work our way through. But this first chapter that we're going to talk about is He Turned Work into Cause. You give us the scripture text, John 9:4, I must work the works of Him that sent me. Talk to us about what your thinking is here. He turned work into cause. How did he use excitement to launch this first principle here?
Well, imagine two people that are looking at a burning building, and one of them says, so the fire chief says, all right, you need to go in there and get your wallet. And the other one says, your baby's inside. Which one's going to be more excited about running into a burning building?
Exactly.
Someone who has something they care about that cannot be replaced, that they feel they are called to protect and defend. They will literally risk their life to go against a survival instinct in order to do something. And studies have shown that people will go further if they're asked to do something that's going to help somebody else. There's even a term, cause marketing. And you see now that so many major corporations are attaching themselves to a cause. Target and Hyundai, I guess. We just saw the Hyundai ad the other day. They're, because people want to work with people who care about things that matter.
Mm.
And with Jesus, when he looked at this group, he said, follow me and I will make you fishers of souls. That's what appealed to them. He didn't say, follow me and I'm going to increase your take-home pay 26%.
Wow.
Pardon me.
That's okay. One of the things that you begin to talk about here is how people perform or underperform in their job if they don't know why they are doing them in the first place. One of the main reasons people underperform in their job is they don't know why they're doing it. Talk
right.
to us about that. What did you infer there?
Well, again, these social scientists that do these experiments, they did an experiment where they asked somebody to watch their packet or stuff. You couldn't ask anybody to watch a package now. You'd get arrested by Homeland Security. But let's say someone is going to go to the restroom and say, I just need to go. Would you watch my things? Because I need to go help my mother in the restroom. As opposed to, will you just watch my things? The people who have a reason attached to it will outperform those who are just asked to do a task.
Mm.
And so if you said, load this sandbag, that doesn't sound too exciting. But if you say, fill this sandbag because it's going to help protect the church or your home, then people throw a little more energy and shoulder into it because it matters.
So this turning work into cause, how does a leader do that? What do they need? What should they be thinking about? How does this work?
Well, the question is, why are you here? What is the service that you are offering the world? And even if it's, a shoe shiner, what is it that you are doing that is making the world a better place? And a shoe shiner could say, well, if this person goes in with more confidence, he might get that sale, which might help feed his family. And I think this is one of the great callings that I have as a consultant and as a coach, and is helping people identify what is it uniquely that they came here to do
right.
on this planet. And when you tap into that, then there is a power that's released that is amazing. It's, in Pentecost, I believe that it was the pilot lights that were lit on those people, the flames that were hovering over their heads. It was their pilot light. It was lit from within.
Sure.
And I was talking to I'm taking a pottery class with my niece in Ocean Beach, and I was there last night, and we were spending so much time on the bottom of the pot. It was just like, nobody is even going to see this. It was just like, first you throw it, then you turn it upside down, and you have to center it, and then you draw a little line, and then you scoop out the line, and then you land it in. And it was like, my goodness, I turned to the bottom, and I said, nobody's even going to see this. And he saw a teachable moment, and he said that he had trained in Japan. He spent some time in Japan, and he said, you might not think the inside of a pot is important either, do you? And I said, no, not really. And he said, but the Japanese, he said, their kimonos are designed so that the most beautiful part is what enfolds them. And they don't care so much if the little nips and nubs are on the outside.
Mm.
And I thought that was a real lesson for Christ, beauty on the inside. And also, what is it that matters most to you? Are you holding it close? Are you spending time on the details? Because actually, functionally, if you don't have the footing right on your pot, it is going to wobble when you stand it up, and then it's not going to be functional. So the Omega leader has to know the cause, but is as concerned about the inside of the pot or the kimono as the outside. It's not, and Jesus said, look on the inside. This is where God looks, not as the man sees.
Mm-hmm.
As God sees.
Yeah, and you talk about that in kind of a different way here in this chapter when you refer to the red blood cell of the body and how it knows the function of the whole that it has.
Right.
on carrying the oxygen to to the right parts of the body. That is just a powerful picture of the cause, right? Turning that cause into work. They don't see it as work. It's just what they do, and they do it very well. And they know if they don't do it, it's something's not going to be right.
Right.
Very, 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 very well written. And I'm sure you could say it. Could elaborate on that a little bit if you wanted to. But that whole DNA code of inside the body, what does that DNA code look like inside your organization, your school, your church, your company? You know, what are those red blood cells and who are they?
Right, right. And, you know, I had the experience this last 2 weeks of cleaning out my garage in my office in El Paso and not in 103-degree weather with no air conditioning. And it was so amazing to go through and see the books that I had saved and that had influenced me. And one of them that I seem to have three copies of was The Holographic Universe.
Mm.
And he talks about the fact that a red blood cell, or a, I believe it's a white blood cell, actually, that it somehow knows the DNA of the whole organism, even though it's only one part of it. And each cell in the body somehow contains the DNA of the whole organism, even if it's just an eye or a tooth. And some people say, oh, that's New Age. Well, no. I mean, if you look at Paul talking about the body, that can the eye say to the hand, I have no need of you, that we are all connected. And so I love it when science gets to explore and touch on the creativity of God. We don't even have the terminology that can be adequate to describe that. But a hologram is something that contains the whole in even a gram. And this is when you do cause marketing, when you turn work into cause, if the whole group knows that that our cause is to take that hill, because if we don't, our families will die, for example, using a military example. If the general falls, then the lieutenant general will take his place, and if he falls, then the next person will take his place, because they know what the cause is.
Sure.
We're clear on that. But if you have an organization where they're saying, you know, just follow orders or just do what you're supposed to do, and the general falls, well, then the lieutenant general is just going to keep looking at what's on his or her desk, because that's their job. So it's very profound, and I think that we've made great inroads in developing this in our culture as to the importance of understanding that every work has cause or should.
Right, and so you've given much of your life, and as well as the work of this organization, to help people get clear about, I believe, one of the pivotal pieces of understanding the big picture is the mission, the individual mission, the collective or corporate mission. You know, how can we know the cause of something if there's no target?
Right. Right.
Yeah. If there's no focus within that body, if you know.
And you know, I think one of the little sayings that I found that I had written, it sort of expresses my philosophy, because it's not that everyone is called to be a great missionary or a great preacher or, you know, Mother Teresa or anything like that. And I think, as I remember it, I said, in stooping and reaching to another's aid, we rise. Yet if we just live splashing, we too reach paradise.
Wow. Well, that's deep.
Oh, if a water is called to be a drop of water in a splash, then do it perfectly. And if your purpose is just to celebrate, like the dolphins or the whales, I mean, the oceans were made for them to play in, and that's what they do. They're living out their mission. They're not trying to, you know, attach themselves to a plow and walk off land and,
right,
you know, please God that makes them miserable. It's just not right. So that's why it's so important to figure out, what are you hardwired to do? What are you created to do? And then do it with all your might.
So basically, I think how you sum this up is that Jesus was able to reveal the bigger picture, and so he turned work into cause. And so
right,
that work piece is the stuff that we're doing, but your question that you're leading with here is, are we finding out what we do best so that the work that we're doing is contributing to the cause instead
right.
of maybe taking it away. So, wow, that is some deep things to think about. This next principle, Lori, that we've just got about 10 minutes to talk about is he taught community. So in this launch of excitement, how Jesus excited his team right away, we're talking about this community. Talk to us about that.
Well, Jesus didn't come to round up a group of people and put them on the heavenly bus and say, "Go ahead, breath, you guys." You know, it was very much, when you look at his teachings, you begin to get a sense of how committed he was to each of us seeing the needs of the other.
Hmm.
The thou instead of just the me. And in community, that's what we do. We look to see how we can take care of one another. I know in San Diego there was just recent huge blackout all across much of the Southwest. And it was interesting to hear the stories of what happened when people realized that their food was going to go bad. So many people that I know, they found a neighborhood barbecue and a gas barbecue grill, and everybody brought their food and they just shared it. And there were amazing stories of restaurants giving away tacos and people, you know, having community bonfires. And so the opposite of looting and destruction was, hey, what do we have to share? It's going to go bad. Let's use it up now. And so I think in a way there was some glory to that happening. You know, are we putting things in the freezer that we're going to save for later that later may never come?
One of the things that stuck out for me in this community portion was that as Jesus built his team to think like a community, you say that the benefits of such thinking were increased spiritual power, a sense of joy and praise, defense against impending dangers, mutual helpfulness, and a deepened faith. Wow, I mean, that is a lot to think about, in community. And you go on to talk about your friends Dave and Susanna in the Adirondacks and how the Fourth Lake community was that kind of place where people from New York City drove up, 3 or 4 hours away, and they were in this live community. Talk to us about that for a second, because that is, I think, a really, really substantial part of this section of the book.
Right. Well, Fourth Lake is a community, and it's a small cluster of camps, or what we would call cabins, that school teachers purchased, and now is third generation. So the grandkids, and they have a community house, and so on Friday nights, they teach community folk dancing. And it's largely a Jewish community, but not exclusively Jewish. There's a lot of, for example, I go, and Dave and Susanna, and people who are not of the Jewish tradition or faith are more than welcome. But it's amazing to see the grandparents teaching the grandchildren the Israeli folk dances.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to break out and have candlelight checker games, and then they share each other's kayaks on the lake, and then they all bring potlucks. I mean, it's basically summer camp for adults up there. But there's a grapevine that knows, Evie isn't feeling well, so people come by and bring her chicken soup. And it's just, I've never seen it like that in a neighborhood. And I know there are neighborhoods like that all over America and hopefully the world. But it was a chance for me to experience it. And I'm thinking of the community of communion, where recently, and I wrote about this in a recent blog, where I was in the balcony, because I like to observe everything, the preacher, well, actually, I was in the circle this particular time, and everybody had formed this huge circle around the church, and then the preacher noticed that there was a homeless man who'd kind of wandered into the back. And so we were getting ready to close out the service, and the preacher stopped and went outside the circle in the church to give this homeless man communion that was at the back of the church. And so there was no music, there was no agenda, and all of us, all we could do, because we were in a circle, was look at one another. And there was the CEO in a business suit looking at the recovering heroin addict, and there was the young mother looking at, you know, the war veteran with his Pearl Harbor hat, and you could sense the Holy Spirit was there, and there was a feeling of awe that here we were, diverse color, ages, backgrounds, you name it, holding hands in a circle, looking at one another, and the feeling was, wow, this is us, and we are God's children. And the responsibility of that, and the beauty of that, and the shock of it, I mean, it all fell
right,
in that moment.
Right.
So community, very important.
Well, let me ask you this about these two words, cause. He turned work into cause, and then he taught community. Do you think that you can have community without cause?
No.
Because a lot of people feel, this is just kind of a, not a statistical, I should say this is my opinion. I wonder if people are... feel that they're part of a community because they're in the AIDS walk or the run for cancer or, societal cause that might be out there. But are we forming communities? Are we connected in this kind of way that the benefits are this increased spiritual power, a sense of joy and praise, a defense mechanism of somebody, of something or someone impending danger that we're aware of, this mutual helpfulness and a deepened faith. I mean, this really struck me, Lori, as the benefits of community. Are we seeing that as leaders? Are we modeling that as leaders? Where is this, and how does this happen in our society?
Well, I'm thinking as you talk about the Arab Spring, you know, the series of revolts that we saw, revolutions that we watched in awe, that we basically had very little to do with, and people were just marching in the streets. And in Egypt, there was a point at which it turned into some mob violence, and what happened was the communities began to police one another and protect one another because there were no police. So they created their own. And sometimes we can come to community in a sense of danger. That's when it's most commonly seen. But what about the picnics where people just get together because they like one another and they enjoy each other's company? In the pottery class, I felt a real sense of community with people. You know, there's a surgeon there. There's someone that works in the defense department. There's, you know, my niece who's a speech pathologist, and me, whatever I may be, and this potter who is possibly one of the happiest people on the planet, you know, and he just does pots and sells, doesn't sell pot, but, you know, sells his pottery. And just he's almost transcendent. He's so happy all the time. And we were in a community, and there was something really beautiful about having our hands in clay and forming shapes that have been formed even back in Jesus's time and beyond. We were one with clay, and it was a community. And so I think classes can be a community. There's
sure.
a yearning for us to have that. Are we open to it?
Yeah, and you allude to John 17 here, that, you know, Jesus's final prayer is that they may be one even as we are, you know. So the essence of sometimes of community is where two or more are gathered of like minds, or maybe for the same cause or not the same cause, but surely we've got just about 20 seconds here, Lori Beth. Any last thoughts on this topic?
Well, I would invite our listeners to think again about what is their cause, what did they come here to do, and how can they serve their community. And in that, people will see Christ.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening to the Omega Leadership Series show again this week. We'll see you next week. Not next week. I think Lori Beth is traveling next week. So we will see you the following week. Same time, same place. And we'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Shelley.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.